on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? It's another edition of YoteCast, the last edition of the year. Take a little break here over the summer months because we are winding down in Coyote athletics. We'll take a little break here, and then we'll be back in maybe late August, maybe early September. We'll have to check the calendar to see how it all falls. But this is the last one of the year, so you're going to have to do something else on Thursdays at noon or whenever you listen to YoteCast. You're going to have to find time to fill that void. But what a year it's been, and we get a chance to reflect on the year at USD Athletics. But what a year it's been. Coming up here on June 23rd, it is the 50th anniversary of Title IX, which was enacted by Congress in 1972, prohibiting sex discrimination in any educational program or activity receiving any type of federal financial aid. It was the biggest step to give women an opportunity to compete, more opportunities to compete and do the things. And we have seen some incredible things in women's athletics. You just look around at the way women's basketball is. There are some incredible volleyball teams around the country, softball, you name it. And in the year that we were approaching the 50th anniversary, this was one of the most successful all around women's sports seasons at the University of South Dakota. There's just so much fun. When you look at volleyball and their run to the NCAA tournament, obviously women's basketball and the Sweet 16 comes to mind. Women's track and field swept the indoor and outdoor conference track titles. The women's team will send three to Eugene, Oregon, and get a chance to compete for national championships. So it's really cool there. Obviously, swimming and diving had great success as well with the runner-up finish, and just a lot of things, a lot of fun results this year for women's athletics at USD. Obviously, men's teams did well, but when you're approaching the 50th anniversary of Title IX, you certainly can appreciate what it has been. This is, I think, got to be close to one of the most successful years in USD history just for women's athletics top to bottom, which is really, really cool to see. And hopefully the success continues in Eugene, Oregon for the three young ladies and the male pole vaulter who get the opportunity to go out there and represent USD and try to compete for national championships. But obviously we're coming off of a South Dakota Showdown Series victory, which was really, really cool. And it was tied. It's never been tied before. Football is the tiebreaker. So there you have it. Obviously, they just recently announced this week, standouts in five different programs that are going into the Henry Hyder Coyote Sports Hall of Fame. The group includes Amber Hagee Cunningham, who graduated in 2012. Louis Krogman was right after that in 2013, a men's basketball standout. Football player Tim Sievers from 1992. Tanya Kneifel Gordon from 2001, the track and field standout. Volleyball player Becky Olsen-Maleen as well in 2004. And then, of course, the longtime track and field coach Dave Gottsleben. Those are going to be the inductees into the Henry Hyder Coyote Sports Hall of Fame, a ceremony that will be held September 16th ahead of the Coyotes football home opener against Cal Poly on September 17th. So congratulations to all of them. Big class, class that was very important to USD Athletics will make their way into the Coyote Sports Hall of Fame, where they certainly do belong. Coming up in the show today, we have introduced you to two of the women's basketball assistants. We'll go for number three today with Gabby Johnson. We'll talk to David Herbster about just the year that was in Coyote athletics and where we stand in USD athletics, kind of the state of Coyote athletics. We'll talk about that. And then we will also get the opportunity to talk to a young lady who's headed to Eugene, Oregon, from just down the road in Columbus, Nebraska, who qualified in the pole vaults to get the opportunity to go to Eugene. And that is Jaden Garrett, who had the chance to compete She'll tell you, one of the lowest heights to clear to go to Eugene, Oregon, but it doesn't matter. What an opportunity, and she's super excited. So we'll talk to her coming up in the show as well. Let's get it started with David Herbster. He's the athletic director at the University of South Dakota.
David, we have just about officially wrapped up another year of a school year and athletics year, and it's been quite a year. We'll get into some of that in just a little bit. Still going, the track athletes, there's a few of them. We've been talking about, you know, them trying to qualify for Eugene, Oregon, which is such a special place for track and field athletes, but just had the West preliminaries, and really cool to see some USD athletes get the opportunity now to represent USD in Eugene, Oregon at the championships.
Yeah, you know, we sent, what did we say? We was 22 athletes to the West Regional, and four kind of make it through, and that's a really special accomplishment if you realize all the track Division I track programs in the country, how many events there are, and literally you got to be top 16 to make it. And so what do we have? We had three pole vaulters and a high jumper make it. So Danny Anglin in the high jump, and then Eric Hammer and Marlene Mueller and Jaden Garnett in the pole vault. Pretty special, especially, again, to send three vaulters again. I mean, I think that's one of the areas where we've been so strong. We talked about it last time. I know they might say it's a little bit of a rebuilding year, but if you're in a rebuilding year and can send three to nationals, that says a lot about the program. And then to have Danny go, what a fun young lady. So I know staff, they're looking forward to it. Coaches Lucky and Derek, certainly looking forward to the trip, but, you know, for these athletes. And you never know. I mean, the opportunity to go there is never guaranteed. So certainly embrace how unique and how special it is to be able to go to Eugene, to go to the national championships in track. And really, you know, for this crew, you got to get over the, you know, well, this is Eugene, Oregon. This is track Mecca. And you can't be, you know, the pole is still going to be as high as you set it. You're still going to carry the same pole. When you set the bar in the high jump at 5'10", it's going to be 5'10", no matter wherever you're jumping. So getting over that kind of the shock or the awe of it first for this being a fairly young group too. But that also bodes well for these individuals and these athletes for years to come.
You know, it's really cool. We talk about the pole vaults, and for the women's pole vault, it had five athletes going to the West preliminary, which was tied for the most in a sport from one school, and to get two of those on, which it says a lot about the state of the track program, the pole vault program, mm-hmm. and the competition within.
Right, and you know, year in and year out, Derek Miles has done an unbelievable job. But it's, you know, the unique thing is that these young ladies are all jumping much higher than they were than when they got here. So you've seen that improvement. And you need meets like this to continue, I think, as much as anything, confidence to be able to compete at that level, to continue to grow and to improve and to mature.
Yeah, it'll be really cool for them to get the opportunity to go to Eugene and Hayward Field and see what all of that is about, because you've talked to some of the athletes who have gone there, and I know that first trip is always special. You talked about a kind of the wow factor of, mm-hmm. Wow, we made it, we're here, this is what it's all about, but really cool when they settle down and just compete.
Right, and this is where the world championships are going to be, so this is kind of like the dry run, if you will, but it's, you know, and it's a renovated facility over the last couple of years. Get preparing for the world championship, so that in itself is pretty cool for these young ones. But hey, you know what, it's all they really want to do is go out and compete, and you've talked to them, and I've talked to them, just genuine, you know, young men and women who are going to go out there in a little bit of aw shucks, a little bit of awe, but that experience, they'll be with them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, we talked about the Showdown Series, mm-hmm. and just had the press conference last week, and you had a chance to have some of the coaches, staff members, all those people together, and kind of appreciate the year that it was with the Showdown Series victory. How fun was that, just to make it official, number one, and then to have everybody together to kind of celebrate it.
Feels good to make it official. It feels good to bring everybody together. You know, the press conference is, you know, again, from beginning to end, doesn't take all that much time. But yeah, everybody gets a chance to get together. You get to see the individuals from the South Dakota Corn Council, Midco Sports, who, you know, two of the main sponsors. But then I think probably more so afterwards. I mean, we all went out to have a bite to eat afterwards, and just to have that big of a group, to have a little bit of camaraderie, break wings. You don't really break bread there. I suppose you can break French fries there, but it's you just to be able to get together. And so, and that, those were just the individuals that came up for the press conference, because primarily we had some staff and head coaches that were there. The area in the room that we do it isn't overly large, so it's not like I could bring everybody in the department there. So what we did that night is we all kind of got together downtown at Old Lumber Company, and just, you know, at that point you're able to come. All coaches, all assistant coaches, staff, and just to be able to a chance to get together. So that part was, it was probably the most fun of the day, was just being able to see everybody interact, get together. Ultimately, it ended up being a beautiful night. And so most everybody ended up on the rooftop patio and just kind of sat out and enjoyed the weather, enjoyed the company, and I think really had the chance to take a deep breath, relax a little bit, and kind of reflect and just appreciate the year.
Yeah, well, the Showdown Series was just a part of what was a really, really successful year in USD athletics. You know, as you kind of look back, I was thinking about this. This was the most normal of an athletics year we've had in about 3 years, of just being able to get through competitions for the most part without a lot of restrictions and without as many cancellations and things like that. And there were still a few here and there, but it had to feel good from your seat just to get back into a little bit more normalcy.
It was, you know, and I, you know, we were talking about this and looking back on it, you know, wasn't sure how it was all going to go. At the very beginning of the year, we had that volleyball tournament that we had to pull out of because we had one positive, and I thought to myself, boy, is this how the year is going to go? And so, you know, it rolls from there. But then, you know, volleyball continued to have success and things were kind of normal. Football, really well. Soccer did well. But there were still things surrounding those games. We still didn't let, you know, any non-essential personnel on the court or on the football field after games or stuff like that. We did our presentations up in the corner. And, you know, things started to look a little bit better. We started to feel a little bit more comfortable or more normal when we kick off the indoor part of the season with basketballs and swimming and track. And for the most part, it was fairly normal. But then you get through Christmas and then there's the, you know, then it kind of resurfaced a little bit, and we had some cancellations, and we had to move some games around in basketball. It got a little weird, and I think we started to get towards February, and we thought we were good, and then other teams start popping, and it's hitting itself again, and we kind of get going into a rhythm. And then it would stop, and we're still testing. We're who's vaccinated, who's boosted, and there was so much else that went into it on trying to just make sure we could continue to go. And it was always in the back of our minds. But then you kind of get through the Summit League tournament, you know, swimming gets through its championships, indoor through its championships, women win the indoor championships, women's basketball wins the Summit League, you're in the Sweet 16. I mean, it just, then you start to pick up a little bit of momentum and things are really starting to feel normal. You're coming down towards the end of the year and, you know, softball, you know, we're in the Summit League tournament and you think things are well, and then oops, now we got to switch it from Brookings to Vermilion because of this winds that went through and shut off all the power in Brookings. So next thing you know, we're hosting a Summit League softball tournament, and you know, tracks got delays down in Tulsa at its outdoor championships. Our softball team loses, but then women outdoor wins it, and you know, golf plays their championships amid a little bit of goofy weather. So and tennis, you know, makes it to the finals, and so things, they started and stopped all year long, and you're just, you know, some days maybe for us more so, we're on maybe on a little bit of pins and needles because you just don't know what's going to happen next. But when it all comes down, you're the South Dakota Showdown Series winners, and you start to reflect back on everything that we went through and all these different little protocols we still had to have in place. And that's when you take a deep breath and you're like, wow, we made it. Mm-hmm. And couldn't be more proud again of what everybody kind of still gave up a little bit to make sure that we could continue to do, you know, play, have games. You know, there's little nuances with the actual game operations that we might have had to adjust. But really, you look back and wow, what some unbelievable, magnificent moments this year. You know, wins, championships, performances, coaches of the year, overall. There's a lot of momentum going into next year.
It's amazing when you sit back and you think about, you know, volleyball and their success, winning the Summit League Volleyball Tournament right here, and being able to go on to the NCAA Tournament, football returns to the playoffs, women's track and field sweeps the titles for the first time at the Division I level. The men finished runner-up in the indoors, and it came down to the last race, and you look at swimming and diving, and they were both in second place, and a lot of really, really good performances. It just it feels good. I mean, this has been a build since USD made its transition to Division One. We've seen some success here and there, but collectively as a department right now, it feels pretty good.
It does. Starting to get things in place. You know, none of this, sometimes this success comes at a cost, and sometimes that cost is when your coaches leave you. But it also puts you in a better position to reload with the success that those programs have had. I look at where our facilities are right now, and where they were and where they are now compared to where we were 10 years ago. I mean, we've just taken huge steps forward. And that's really, you know, still that outlook that, I mean, I guess I from my perspective, we still have bigger steps to continue to take. I think, you know, we still have to look and get a better kind of sense and idea of what's the NCAA going to look like in a year? What does it mean to be Division I? What's that going to look like in a year to really determine where we sit? But for the success that we've had, the quality of student athletes that our coaches have brought in, the quality of coaches that we have here, the breadth of staff that we've got here, and kind of their, you know, the amount of work that they put into it. I mean, that's what binds this whole thing together. And seeing the success of the teams and the individual student athletes makes so much of everything that we go through worth it. That it is. It's, you know, I'm blessed to be a part of this program, to lead these coaches and to lead these teams and student athletes, because none of that gets done really without them. And if I can put the right pieces in place and get out of the way, that's when they seem to have the most success.
Well, as you sit back and look at it, and we talk about some of the success that we've had in the last year, and obviously there's a couple of new coaches in place as you go into next year. You talked about facilities, the football, the dome and the renovation. That was a process. It's in a much better space. Talk about the new pool that we've talked about before and the addition of the wellness center and just the way the facilities, some of that is kind of on the horizon. And all of this stuff put in place, we're wrapping up a year. We'll take a little summer break. It's not always a break. There's always things going on during the summer months. But, you know, we'll be back at it and ready to try to compete for championships. So when you look at where the facilities are and the current success and now the coaches in place, how do you feel about, you know, USD athletics right now and where it is?
You know, really, really good. I look at, you know, certainly we've had to replace some coaches, and we're going to have to replace some staff. You know, Jeanette Hubert retires at the end of the school year, and Mike West, our deputy AD, left and went back to Omaha and working at Nebraska Omaha. So, you know, a couple pretty key positions that we'll fill. One's filled, one will hopefully have done in a few weeks, but those are going to be big ones. Coaching staffs, I feel like right now our coaches are fairly well. All those positions are solidified. We're still looking for, you know, a few positions here and there, athletic trainers and some, you know, facility operations positions. But we've started to get people in place. And so, again, now you can take the high and what we've accomplished this year, and really, you know, there's not much of a summer because now it's getting everything ready. So come fall, we just kind of flip the switch and we can go. So as much as we're going to try to get a little bit of rest, you take a little bit of time away. Summer's that time where, while you don't have events that you've got to work on, you have to work almost just as hard to get ready for the events, to plan, to, you know, put the different pieces in place. But if I, again, looking at next year, I see us in literally every single program building off of the success that we had in areas where you had graduations. We have youth that is stepping in areas where we've had maybe coaching turnover. I think we've improved in all those areas. We continue, you know, our biggest keys right now is to take a look at from a revenue perspective, how can we enhance the experience to get people into the games, to get people to football games, to get people to basketball, to volleyball, whatever it is, provide that experience, because that's going to be part of the key to all of this and continuing to move this forward is the support of all the fans. There's nothing better than having a full venue to give you that boost and that edge. You know, we'll look at from a marketing standpoint or howling pack perspective, is there's things that we can do, initiatives that we'll undertake to try to bring more people into the fold, activate more of Coyote Nation, and find ways and give them opportunities to be involved, to support, to come to events, to see us at away games. I think that's key now, because now really from top to bottom, you have a product that is something that I think all fans should be proud of and certainly would want to come see. So we'll kind of focus in and work hard on that. And then really, we really need to start to find some opportunities and ways to provide some support for our student athletes from a mental health standpoint, a mental wellness standpoint, different avenues for them to be able to have those conversations, to seek help when needed. I certainly think that's one thing that we've seen over the course of the last really couple years, and maybe COVID shed a greater light on that, but that's really an area where if we're going to really serve and support our student athletes, that's one of those areas that many people, even in everybody's home life, you're probably experiencing some stress, some anxiety, some little things here and there that you might just kind of push off a little bit. But you put these athletes under the microscope in the classroom and travel and in games, and it's a lot that bears down on them that we need to provide some avenues for them to be able to seek help and support when needed.
Well, I know a lot of people do a lot of things to try to help the student athletes and the staff and all of that, and even our fans. So we certainly appreciate that. And it's been a heck of a year. We'll look forward to what next year has to bring. David, this is our last conversation to give you a little break from the podcast.
Who's giving who a break?
I don't know here, but no, really do appreciate your time all year long and giving us the time, not only just the time, but the insight to a lot of things, whether it's USD Athletics or things going on with the NCAA and some of that, because I know a lot of people appreciate hearing it from you. Someone who obviously is committed to doing the best that we can here at USD. So thanks so much for all the time this year. Really appreciate it. And have yourself a good summer.
Well, I will try, John. You do the same. Like, certainly people don't realize how much and how vital you are to our department to be able to share the story, the stories of our student athletes and our coaches, to be there, to be the voice. I know there's a lot of travel. There's a lot of sacrifice that goes into it, but you do it with passion. You do it with class. Thank you. For not only for what you do, for putting up with me every week when we do these, but just know that you have a lot of people that really appreciate you and me being number one. So thank you.
That's David Herbster. He's the athletic director at the University of South Dakota, and certainly appreciate his kind words and appreciate his time that he's given us all year long. And we'll get back to Ask the AD next year, so think of your questions over the summer break, and we'll get those questions to David Herbster coming up next year as we get started here in the fall. Headed to Eugene, Oregon, are four different USD athletes, three on the women's side, one male headed to Eugene, Oregon. Of the four, three are pole vaulters, one is a high jumper, and I had a chance to catch up with sophomore Jaden Garrett, talk about her story, challenging senior season of high school, a frustrating first year at USD, but now an opportunity to compete at the NCAA championships at Tracktown USD Hayward Field in Eugene, Oregon. This week, I caught up with Jaden Garrett. Jaden, first of all, congratulations qualifying for the NCAA championships. I know it's everybody's goal to get as far as you can, and you get the chance to compete in the final collegiate meet of the year. So congratulations. I'm sure it's a good feeling for you.
Yeah, thank you. It'll be a lot of fun, especially with other teammates.
We'll talk more about that in a little bit, but I want to go back to you. You and your college decision, you remember that a couple of years ago, and unfortunately you had your seniors track season at high school canceled because of COVID. Everybody went through that kind of process. How was that battle for you mentally, dealing with the canceled season and then having to go to college and really kind of get refocused?
It was definitely a little bit weird because my junior fall, I was supposed to play volleyball, but I got knee surgery. So I actually was, my senior fall, I got knee surgery. So I was out the whole senior year. But then when we heard that track was canceled, it was definitely, like, devastating because you want to prove that you can go higher. But I think it was actually a blessing because I wasn't ready to compete physically. But college decision, I don't think it would have made it any different. I definitely would have chosen South Dakota no matter where or what I would have done.
You talk about having to deal with the knee surgery and bouncing back from that. A lot of people don't realize the rehab that goes into it. How was it for you as you tried to battle back and knowing that you were going to continue your collegiate career?
It was definitely hard to just, like, it was definitely hard to come into college not 100%. I would say I had a pretty smooth rehab as far as, like, I followed all the instructions and everything, but making sure that, like, when I came here, I was still pretty sore, so Derek helped me along quite a bit, just realizing that it's going to take me a lot longer. I had, like, a rough freshman indoor season. He's like, it's going to be okay, like, you're fine, but that definitely helped a lot, just him supporting me.
As you were going through all of that and you decided to attend the University of South Dakota, it's not too terribly far from your hometown of Columbus, Nebraska, but what ultimately led you to the decision that maybe this was a place for you?
I really liked it's Division I, but it's a smaller campus. So I can go everywhere on campus within 10 minutes, and it's super, super convenient. And then I felt like when I met the kids, the pole vaulters here, they just were super, super welcoming, and that was the first thing I noticed.
There's been a great deal of success in pole vault at USD.
Mm-hmm.
Men, women, there's been a lot of success, obviously, being coached by someone who had a great deal of success in their career. How cool is that? And just to have that opportunity to kind of soak in those experiences.
It's so cool. I mean, Chris and Emily literally train here. They'll just walk in and be like, hey, but like I definitely fangirl. I'm like, whoa, 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 like you've been to the Olympics. It's so much fun just being able to see all different levels of everybody and where everybody came from. And everybody came together at the same place for the love of pole vault.
You talked about rehabbing a knee injury and kind of having a tough indoor freshman season. Some of that due to the injury, and I would imagine some of it's just the transition to college track and field. What was that transition like for you?
It was very different because in high school, track is three months. That's it. I didn't do anything else outside of it. But then coming here, track was all year round. So I definitely could tell that my body was not used to it. But then once it ended, I think that this year I was a lot more prepared.
You have the Class A pole vault record in Nebraska at the state meet. I think it was...
Not anymore. It got broken this weekend, but I have the all-class, all-state record, but not the meet record.
So you had it.
Yes.
And I think that was like, was it 12 feet 4, somewhere around there?
Yeah.
4.5?
But then I went 13.4 for the all-class record.
Very cool. So you have been able to increase your height a little bit on a more consistent basis.
Yeah.
What kind of process is that to try to get to, you know, a higher bar?
It's so frustrating. I'm not even going to lie. It's just like Derek always talks about you need to trust the process, and there's a lot of up and downs, but you need to look at the bigger picture. And so, like, the bigger picture is that I've been improving, but, I mean, it obviously stinks along the way, the up and downs, and you're just like, what am I supposed to do? But it's just really like trusting the process and seeing that the bigger picture is the higher heights rather than, oh, I have to jump high every single meet, like every single time, or I'm not getting better, but I'm working in practice every day to get better, and then it's going to translate over.
The Nebraska State Track meet, track and field meet, Burke Stadium, it's a phenomenal setting.
Yeah.
What is it like as a competitor? It's kind of down in a bowl for people who haven't been there. What is it like as a competitor being on that stage?
Oh, it's so much fun. Like, my dad was my coach in high school all throughout. So it was kind of just like us two together, just walking around Burke, like experiencing it together. It was so much fun. It was just like everyone was, it felt like everyone was like right on top of you.
As you transitioned into college track and field and you dealt with the rough, you said the rough indoor season your freshman year, how do you try to keep it together mentally to try to know that you could do better than where you were at?
Yeah, lots of talks with Derek. Just lots of him being like, it's going to be okay. Like, you are a freshman. It's okay. Like, you got this. I believe in you. Like, we'll get you through it. Just many talks with him about just, you need to believe in yourself, you can do it, like, you're coming back from hard stuff, you're a freshman year's terrible, like, it's hard, you're in a whole new place, away from people that you know, so it was just him helping me through it all.
This year has been an incredible year for the women's track and field program, and you've been a big part of that. Let's start with the indoor season, snapping a 14 straight championships for North Dakota
Something
State,
like that.
And South Dakota finally wins one. Describe that moment for you individually and just as a team to accomplish what has been a long-time goal of the program.
Oh, it was so much fun. The 4x4 ended, and we knew we had won. And we'd all just stormed, I think it was Sarah or Madison, one of the two, and we were just like, holy cow, we did it. Because we believed that we could do it. We were like, wow, we really do have a chance this year. And then we beat them by 50 points, and we were like, whoa. All of us were just so, it was so much fun, because like all the emotion on everybody's face was just like, we did it. Like, we finally beat NDSU. It was so much fun.
Then you go to the outdoor season, and obviously some of the events change, the elements change, a little less controlled environments when you're outdoors. But you claim another title, the outdoor title, and it's the first sweep for the program, indoor and outdoor, at the Division I level. Mm-hmm. How much cooler was that one, or how did that feel once you got that done and knew that you guys had swept the conference titles?
It was the same as indoor. I feel like it was just like, we did it again. We proved that we deserved to win indoor, so then we came back and did it again for outdoor.
You were one of the athletes that qualified for the West Preliminaries down in Arkansas. Describe that feeling, getting the chance to go there, knowing that you're now competing for a chance to go to Eugene, Oregon, which is obviously everybody's goal.
Mm-hmm. We had 5 girl vaulters make it, so that was just so much fun because we're all a pretty close group. And so just knowing that you're there with your teammates just makes it all the much better. I didn't really think about qualifying too much. I was like, I have an offside chance, but I never really thought like, oh, like you can, I don't know, you know. But it was just a lot of fun being down there with the team.
5 vaulters from the women's team, which means there is constantly a lot of competition, not just at meets, but I would imagine in practice. How has that made you a better pole vaulter?
Oh, it's just made me all the better because every practice we're pushing each other, but then we also support each other. So anytime anyone PRs, it's like everyone on the team PRs. You see us pit tackling all the time, just supporting everybody. I never feel like it's like competitive, but it's never like a unhealthy competitive where it's like you want to sabotage someone. It's more of like a, I want to build you up to make you the best you can be.
You qualified for Eugene, Oregon, had that opportunity, tied with a bunch of, there's a whole group with the same bar clearance, but you had cleared it earlier, which allows you to go to Eugene. What was that process like once you had cleared your height and you were just waiting to figure out what was going to happen? What was that process for you?
Well, I didn't know. So we cleared the 13.5¾ bar or whatever, and then the bar went up to 4:21, which would tie my PR, and I missed all 3. And so I thought I had to make that bar to make it, because Derek wasn't telling me how many people were left, because he's like, just focus on the bar, you're fine. And so then when I went over, I was really sad, because I missed the 3 bars, and then he's like, you made it, and I was just like, whoa, what did you just say? Like, I was very shocked.
So you get that shocking moment, and once it settled in,
What did that mean to you? You know, you go back to the rehab from the knee injury, the tough freshman season, Derek telling you to stay with it, telling you that he believed in you. I'm sure a lot of emotions come through you once you realize that you had qualified for Eugene. What was that moment like for you?
It was pretty cool just because it's like, going to Oregon is like, the Hayward Field is like the mecca of the track world, so I'm just so excited to be there and just see everything. I don't know if it's really set in quite yet. It's still kind of like, whoa, like what's going on here, but I'm really excited. And like, Marlene went to indoor nationals, so like she's been on, like known all those girls before, so I'm excited to be able to do it with her rather than like just trying to go there and figure out my life.
You're one of four athletes from the University of South Dakota to qualify for the championships at Eugene, three on the women's side, one on the men's side. In total of the four, three are pole vaulters. How cool is this? Just, if you talked about how close everyone is. How cool is this for everyone who gets the opportunity?
Oh, it's so cool because it just shows how deep our pole vault program is. The fact that we can qualify two girls and one boy is just like, we're strong on both sides. It's not just one side.
You talked about being shocked that you had made it. So now what's your goal when you go out there? It's going to be a different environment. You talked about it being the mecca.
Yeah.
It's everybody's goal. Sometimes you got to get there and soak it in a little bit.
Yeah.
But what's your goal when you get to Eugene?
Just try to experience it. I'm not expected to do anything crazy. Like, I made it on the lowest bar that got in, but I'm kind of just like, well, you made it. Like, that's what's going on. Like, it's not like it's anything. I don't have to, I feel like I don't have to jump anything crazy. Like, obviously it'd be nice to PR, but it's not like, it's not expected.
It'll be a neat opportunity, no question, and it'll be a building block for you. Has this kind of felt as you go through the conference championship, then the West preliminaries and qualifying, now you get this opportunity, does it motivate you for the next couple of years?
Oh, definitely. Just like seeing what you can do, and you, obviously you want to go higher every year, so it's, yeah.
You've got plenty of track left, but as you look at it now, kind of what are your goals once you're done with college, and what would you like to do in the future?
I want to go to PT school. I don't know where yet, but that's the end goal.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. Congratulations so far on your success, and good luck out in Eugene.
Thank you.
That's Jaden Garrett. She is a pole vaulter at the University of South Dakota. She'll be representing USD, one of four athletes at Tracktown USD. The others, Marlene Mila, who is also a pole vaulter, Danny Englund, who is a high jumper, and then the male representation, Eric Hammer. He has qualified in the men's pole vault as well, so good luck to all of them. That competition gets underway next week in Eugene, Oregon. And last but never, ever least, we have introduced you to Women's Basketball Assistants as Kayla Carius has put together her staff. We had Ty Morgenthaler, then we had Taylor Ignoto. Now Gabby Johnson had a chance to catch up with her here a couple of weeks ago, and we chatted about her new opportunity at USD.
Gabby, you were the last assistant hired for Coach Kayla's staff, and getting settled in, I know it's been kind of crazy. How have you handled kind of just the whirlwind of a job change and relocating to a place that so far you hadn't lived yet?
Yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, Kayla was like, hey, I want to offer you a job at South Dakota. And I was like, well, I've never been there.
Yeah.
And she was like, all right, do you want to come out and check it out? And I was like, yeah. And I looked at some other opportunities at the same time. And, you know, I walked on campus and I talked to her and I was like, all right, this is where I'm going to go. I played a little hard to get for a couple hours. And then before the day was over, I was like, all right, I'm in, which was really exciting. But, yeah, it's drastically different than any place I've ever lived. I've lived in Northern Kentucky, Chicago, Indianapolis, Valpo, and even Valpo's small, but it's not Vermilion small. And so it's definitely a new challenge, but I'm excited about it. And, you know, now I've just got to get my things moved here and get settled in that sense.
We'll talk more about you getting the job at South Dakota in a little bit, but go back. You've been in coaching now for a little while. When did you know that coaching was something that you wanted to do, you wanted to pursue after your playing career was done?
Well, I originally thought I was going to be a high school coach, a chemistry and math teacher. My high school coach is a phenomenal woman, and so I was like, that's what I want to do. And then I actually went and observed a classroom in college, and I said, no, this is not for me. So I've got to figure out another path to coach. And so, you know, then my college coach, he was phenomenal as well. I basically played for the male version of my high school coach, which was an accident, but it panned out to work out for me. And so as soon as I graduated, I was his assistant. And then I kind of just gone from there. I was an assistant at Northern Kentucky when they were D2 for 2 years. And then my coach, my boss at the time, Nancy Winstall, retired. So I applied for a couple D3 jobs, and I got a D3 head coaching job just outside of Chicago at 25. I was not ready, but it was a good learning experience, to say the least. I'd never really lost before, and we were getting our butts kicked. And I was like, I learned so much about myself in that process, which I think has made me a better coach. I've found my voice throughout that process. And then I was at Valpo for 3 years, and then 9 months at Butler.
What was the biggest thing that you had to learn as you went through that journey fairly young in your coaching career? You're all of a sudden a head coach. You're going through some challenges. And then you, you know, continue your coaching career elsewhere. What's been the biggest thing that you've learned as a coach?
For me, it's being who I am, like being very honest with our kids. I tend to demand a lot and have, high expectations for other people. But you can't do that unless the kids can trust you and respect you. And so I'm always open to having tough conversations, even, you know, conversations to give my personal experiences so that they know that they're not alone in that situation. And I think when I first started coaching, I was very guarded. And I realized that for me, like, that doesn't work for me. And so our kids know they can come talk to me about anything, and I'm an open book for them.
I read that you graduated after your playing days, third most assists in program history. So obviously somebody who likes to distribute the basketball. How would you kind of summarize your playing career?
Well, unfortunately, I think I've been bumped down to like number 9. So the head coach there, I'm like, Jeff, I just need like an asterisk underneath that. Just be like, Gabby was in the top 10 when she graduated. I was lucky to play with some really good players at Thomas More. And so I realized that if I wanted to be a significant part of the program, I had to figure out that scoring was not going to be, you know, my niche. And so I decided I was going to learn our offenses in and out and be a leader and play defense and really find the other players to help them find easy shots. And it worked out. I mean, I actually averaged the most minutes, I think, my senior year, even when I was playing with an All-American, just because, and I mean, it was close. I mean, we're talking about tenths of a second or even a minute or so, but it was one of those things where it was cool because my coach was like, we need you on the floor and you're going to run our offense. So that was really exciting. And I think that that has helped me with coaching as well. Cause you know, if you're an assistant, you're not the person at the front of the bench who's calling all the shots, but there's so much work that goes on behind closed doors that, you know, Kayla's success is all of our success here. And I think that that's really, really important. And you have to be able to embrace that and figure out what your role is.
You know, some people say the hardest spot on a coaching or on a bench really is sliding over into that head coaching spot. You did that for a while, and then you had to slid back over into the assistant spot. How was that challenge for you, or that change, and just adjusting to whatever your role may have been?
Well, I think the hardest part is you always think that you would do it differently and better, right? And it's not always better. It's just different. I think everyone has a different coaching style. That was one of the first questions I asked Kayla was just, you know, just three former head coaches on staff. Taylor was a head coach for a year, and Ty was for 4 or 5 years, and I've been a head coach. And so, like, her being able to have her voice in that room and being able to tell us, like, all right, cool, we're going to still do it this way, which is great. And I think that that's really important. But, you know, for me, it was about learning and doing something different. So I've been able to learn different style of play from my Valpo experience. And I think also just finding that balance of not being so uptight about things. You know, as an assistant, sometimes you got to be the calm in the storm, and you got to be able to be like, all right, cool, look, we have to make a decision. It'll be fine. Like, being the person that's reassuring people in that process, I think, has only made me a better coach. Because if you can do that for the players, you can do that for your head coach. I think in the long run, if you're a head coach again, you'll know exactly what you need.
It's pretty incredible when you think about that. Like, you get three assistant coaches all have at least 1 year of head coaching experience, helping out a coach who's at her first head coaching stop. Mm-hmm. And she is still relatively young in her coaching career, maybe not the same age that you were when you got your head coaching job or Taylor, but still relatively young. How can all of that work together and your experiences, successes and failures as a head coach, help another young coach getting her first opportunity?
Well, Kayla's sharp. I think she's on top of it. Like she and I talked about, you know, she was able to watch the new Drake coach kind of go through that process of being a first-time head coach. You know, she saw it firsthand every single day. But I think, you know, we've already talked about this, like constantly thinking about what were things that we experienced that she can start to think about before she even gets there, you know. And, you know, we talked about even, I said, Kayla, we got to practice some in the game situations. Like, are you going to want the board in your hand? Because some coaches don't want to do that in the game. And, you know, even just that takes practice. I think it's one, probably the most nerve-wracking part of the game is when you're like, oh my gosh, we need to play to end this game or this go out of a timeout. And you've got to have the confidence to know exactly where you're going to send people and be able to put the people in the right spots and know who's in the game. Half the time you're drawing up play and you're like, that person's not even in. Where are they at? And so I think that is something that we've all talked about. Like, what were things that we learned in that process that we can kind of just be like, hey, have you thought about this? And I think that's we've already kind of done that in this office in the first week and a half. And so I think that's going to be huge and a beneficial part of her growth as a head coach. But I have no doubt that she's ready for this.
When you look at your experience here, the last few years, you've been a Valpo, you've been a Butler, a conference that is very similar in some ways to the Summit League. How do you feel maybe the conferences match up? I'm not sure how familiar you are with the Summit League, but you continue to grow in that. You've seen some of the teams, I'm sure, in it. But how do you think the conferences compare?
To the Missouri Valley?
Yeah.
I think it's really comparable, actually, because if you look at it, there's always the one or two top dogs who kind of run the show at times, but there's always that middle pack that can sneak one on you whenever. So, you know, I think it's huge to be able to say, like, I've seen this style of play. I've watched Summit games before. I've actually watched USD games before. And so I think that they're very, very similar. I have to watch style of play a little bit more to see, you know, the similarities there, but I think you've got to have a plan and you've got to be able to defend every single night. And I think that's huge. But, you know, USD is going to have a target on their back. And even with the loss of five starters, you know, we talk about these kids have been here. They just have less experience mm-hmm. on the floor. And so people are going to want your best effort every single night. So similar to, you know, the Drakes, the Missouri States and in the Missouri Valley, you've got to be ready to go every single night. And so we've got to keep our kids focused on that.
You talk about working for Coach Kayla and just her being sharp. But when you had the opportunity to come to Vermillion and come to USD and kind of look around and decide if this was the right fit for you, as you looked around, what made you think this is a good spot, this will be a good move?
Well, I think the winning tradition, I mean, these facilities are also unreal. You walk in and you're just like, you're shocked by how cool this looks. I mean, just the fact that we're connected to the dome, you know, and just being able to walk across a hallway and the experience of that. And I honestly can say that, like, being someone who loves recruiting, if I knew without a doubt that I could sit a kid in Kayla's office and that kid would be enamored with the energy that she brings and what USD has done in the past. And I think that is huge for me because, you know, assistants can only be so good, right, with the recruiting. It's about the head coach. So if the head coach can sell a kid on their vision, that's the most important piece. And so that was something I was really, really drawn to. It's like, you know what? I have no doubt that we can get a kid excited and then that Kayla's going to finish the job, which is every assistant coach's dream.
Excuse me. You know, you just in conversation with you, you can tell that you're kind of energetic in yourself. You love the competition, and this is a place that women's basketball has really grown. And women's basketball in this state gets a lot of attention. Fans come out for it, enjoy it. They're coming off of an incredibly successful year. How exciting! There's always going to be challenges with that, right? But it's also excitement to try to continue to build off of what is currently there.
Yeah, I mean, Well, I'll be honest. I mean, in college, I played in 3 NCAA tournaments. I was an assistant for 1 at Northern Kentucky, and I haven't been in an NCAA tournament since then. And so, you know, the opportunity to be an assistant here and not only make a postseason tournament, but also kind of look around and be like, there's an expectation here, which I think drives you. And then your fans are going to be behind you when that happens. I think that that's a really exciting thing, and I think that that is that's what makes USD special.
How much do you take that drive from the excitement of NCAA tournaments from your playing days, trying to get back there at this level and just experience that opportunity?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's cool to be able to say, like, I've been there. I have friends who played scholarship basketball who never made an NCAA tournament. So, you know, I tell kids all the time, like, I hope to help them get there. You will never play another basketball game that even compares to what an NCAA tournament game feels like. And I'm saying that as a D3 player, right? Like, I remember when I was a senior, we had to play Hope, who just won the D3 national championship this past year. And that year, George Fox won it. Scott Ruick, who's the head coach at Oregon State now, like, the excitement that was in the gym in our Sweet 16 was just unmatched to any game I played in my 4 years. So it's something that even if there was 4 people in the gym, you're like, there's just a different level of expectation here. And I hope to help as many players reach that in their playing careers. Even if it's just once, it's a heck of an experience.
You've got a lot of experience, still relatively young, though, in your coaching career, and you've seen a number of changes in the way that recruiting happens and some of that with the NIL and the transfer portal. How have those things kind of challenged, I guess, your role as a coach as you continue to try to, you know, build a atmosphere that people want to be a part of, right? An environment that people want to be a part of and a culture, but also knowing that that there's those opportunities for student athletes to look elsewhere.
Yeah, I think it starts with the beginning of your process. One of the first things that Kayla and I talked about when we were talking about the job, we had multiple conversations about, like, you know, my vision of recruiting. That's kind of the area that she and I really, like, talked about the most. And I just said, you know, I think it's really important to build relationships. I think, you know, everyone's in a rat race to be like, can I beat this person out for an offer? How do we get this kid to commit? And I'm like, why are we rushing to offer people, right? Like, let's build a relationship with them, because I think, especially at USD and some mid-majors, like, if you can build a relationship with a kid, those kids are going to feel very, like, there's going to be a loyalty that's built into them. And they're going to be like, all right, yeah, you know what? I killed it and I was averaging 20 points a game and I'm getting looks from other places, but I'm going to stick around and see where this goes. And so for me, I think that that's kind of been I've always thought about relationships being an important part of the recruiting process and not rushing. But I think this has just really hammered that home even more, is like, let's be the school that, like, really, really takes our time on some of these kids and builds relationships, because a kid who wants a quick and shiny and, you know, all these other things may not be the best fit for USD. And so we want the best fits for USD, and it sells itself, but how do we make that better? And I think that kind of taking our time and making sure that we know who we're getting and they know who we are is the best way to be successful in recruiting.
With the whole coaching staff in place, you said this before, everybody brings something different to the table. What do you bring to this team, to the program, to this coaching staff that is kind of your role?
I think organizing our recruiting is going to be huge. That's going to be kind of on my table, but also, like, I'm pretty intense, and so, like, I can get fired up with the best of them, but it doesn't happen all the time. Like, I'm not a huge rah-rah person all the time, but, like, there's going to be moments where I'm pumped and I'm ready to go, and I think that just being able to kind of throw that out there for your players every once in a while is huge for them, because they can feed off of that. And so I think that's probably going to be my thing. Like, I'm going to be the person that's looking at everybody else like, let's freaking get after somebody. Let's, you know, let's push them a little bit. And that's just, I was like that as a player, and it's kind of carried over into my coaching style too.
Well, it should be a lot of fun. Gabby, great stuff. Thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Welcome to Vermillion and USD, and I know our fans will look forward to getting to know you and the rest of the staff. Thanks so much.
For sure. Go Yotes.
That's Gabby Johnson, one of the new assistant women's basketball coaches at the University of South Dakota. And that concludes our year in Yotecast. We have produced at least 40 episodes throughout the course of the year, and I hope you got something out of them. The opportunity to learn a little bit more about some of our student athletes, not all of which are in the spotlight all of the time. We also had a chance to talk to athletic staff members. We had a chance to catch up with coaches throughout the course of the year, all of that. And I hope you enjoy and get something out of our podcast each and every week, because we do think about these a lot and try to figure out who best is on the podcast or should be on, and who you're interested in. So you can always email us or contact me directly. Email us at yokecast@usd.edu and share your suggestions if you have any thoughts on what you'd like to see in the podcast coming up here next year as well. Before we wrap things up, I do want to say a big thank you to a number of people here. First of all, David Herbster, the athletics director at USD. He's been very supportive of our podcast effort over the last couple of years. He's given us a great deal of his time, and we certainly appreciate that. These podcasts don't happen. They don't get scheduled. I don't get interviews lined up without our tremendous sports information department staff at USD, including Brian Betcher and Brittany Smith, Evan Maldonado, and Jason Cowley as well. They all do a tremendous job of helping generate ideas. And then not only that, they do a lot of the communication with the people we're going to have to get things lined up. They kind of set my schedule, if you will. they tell me this is where you need to be, when you need to, and when you need to be there. And so, it's a great team effort, and I certainly appreciate what they do. And then also Caleb Christensen and Jaron Duffy, they are big behind promoting it, and we always appreciate the promotion of Yotecast so more people get the opportunity to discover it, and hopefully it's something that continues to grow, because when it grows, then we keep doing it, and that's always a fun thing. And then obviously to my boss, Travis Lee, who gives us the opportunity to even consider doing the Yotecast podcast. So appreciate the time that he has for everything that he does, and the opportunities that he gives as well. So my thank you to you, the listeners, for listening each and every week. We'd always love to see the podcast numbers grow and continue to grow, but we are grateful for each and every one of you that take the time to listen to this throughout the course of the season. The final Coyote athletes competing for the year, we'll do so in Eugene, Oregon. That gets underway next week. So follow along at goyotes.com for all of the updates on how they're doing at Trackdown USA. For the final time this year for Yotecast, I'm John Thayer. Thanks so much for listening all season long. Until next time, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.